What happened? What are you doing here?
I got to the intersection at 9 o'clock, on the dot. I pumped the accelerator, making the truck jerk so the jerk on the back would think we had engine trouble. I stopped. Fletch, there were no cops there. Not sign one of them. I got out, put the hood up, fiddled around with the engine. The goon in back was trying to climb over the cab's rooftop to help me. The calf bull kept butting him back. I had no choice but to slam down the hood and get going again.
You didn't even go through a roadblock?
I never saw a cop anywhere, not one. All the way here. I even sped. Went through stop signs. I tell you, man, I couldn't even get arrested. Do you think all the cops in 2 states have gone fishing?
I doubt they'd catch any fish either.
I figured the best thing to do was to come here. I've driven around the square 4 times waiting for you. Tolliver doesn't seem to have even a traffic cop. Not even a school crossing guard.
My God, I'm sorry. I never meant to put you at risk for such a long time.
I'm fine.
Carrie indicated the back of the truck with her thumb.
Better than he is.
Fletch went to the back of the truck.
Hello, Leary. Have a nice ride?
Leary was a mess. The calf bull had knocked out 2 of Leary's teeth. His eyes were blackened and swollen. His face was cut. There was a deep gash on his bare left shoulder. He was covered with dung. His skin was painfully burned, as red as the setting sun. On top of the sunburn, Leary had dozens of tick bites. Through his swollen lips, Leary said,
I'm thirsty.
Fletch could not help a twinge of compassion for him. The bull calf was no worse for his experience.
Carrie said, he's crisped up pretty good.
Fletch had returned to the cab's window. Beat up pretty good, too. Jack and Kriegel have been complaining of being thirsty all the way down. Carrie smiled. Bless their hearts.
I guess you have to come with us now. Damn, I didn't mean this to happen. What happened to the sheriff? I couldn't have been more clear with him. How could he let you get by?
I don't know. Surprise me, too.
Well, I guess you have to follow us. To the encampment?
Hey!
Leary shouted at him.
I'm thirsty.
Oh, shut up, Fletch said. Are you a tough guy or not?
Tough guy,
Leary confirmed.
So?
Fletch sighed. Turn around and follow us.
Okay.
Carrie,
what?
You did do what you said you were going to do, didn't you? You did go to that intersection. I mean, you didn't come here because you were worried about me or anything, did you?
Shoot, no, she smiled. I've seen too much of these villains as it is.
I can't understand what happened to the sheriff.
Best laid plans, Carrie said, often get screwed up.
Yeah, but I'm not sure we can take care of both of us. Bringing a woman, you, into a camp full of psychotic males? When we get there, you watch your mouth, will you?
Why, I'll be as quiet as a church mouse while the collection plate is being passed.
Nothing you say can change these fools, you know.
Only thing they need, Carrie said, is shooting.
Let's not start anything, all right?
Carrie stuck her jaw out.
I won't if they don't.
Back across the road, Fletch opened the door to the front passenger seat.
You drive, he said to Jack. I'm not about to pass myself off as one of your merry band.
Scooting across the seat, Jack asked, do you know how to get to this encampment?
Sure, Fletch closed the door. You know stupid people can't keep secrets.
Watching Carrie through the rearview mirror pull the truck up behind them, Jack said, I was pretty sure you didn't mean Carrie to meet us here.
Fletch said nothing.
Chapter 11.
Fletch said to Carrie, Welcome to Sherwood Forest.
Yeah, Carrie said. Where's the sheriff of Nottingham when you need him?
There were many strange-looking men standing around. For the most part, they wore army camouflage pants and shirts. Many wore wide belts with holstered knives and handguns hanging from them. Some were overbuilt, some overly fat, many short and runty, many with their heads shaved, faces scarred by acne or cuts, several showing damage wrought by alcohol and other drugs, teeth missing, noses broken, peculiarly intense eyes, one with an ear missing. A few held semi-automatic weapons carelessly. One shirtless citizen was as big as Leary.
These are the racially superior? Carrie asked.
Fletch said, Hush your mouth, girl.
They look like they were scraped off a tavern floor.
The men gathered around the back door of the station wagon.
Kriegel had waited for Jack to open the back door for him.
The Reverend Dr. Chris Kriegel stepped out of the back door of the station wagon like the Empress Catherine alighting from her golden coach. He raised his arms.
I have come,
Carrie muttered. He wishes he had. All the men standing around raised their right arms in stiff salute, except one who raised his left arm. There had been three men with semi-automatic weapons at the entrance to the encampment. In a clipped voice, Jack had identified himself to them as Lieutenant Faoni, Kriegel as Commandant Kriegel, and told them Carrie and Leary in the truck behind them were part of the expected party.
Who are you? One of the men asked Fletch.
Siegfried, Fletch said. Jack said, code name Siegfried. They drove along a dirt road twisting through a thick forest. Halfway along the road, another man stood with a semi-automatic weapon. He gave them a hard-eyed stare as they passed. The encampment itself was a clearing of pasture gone to seed. In the most central place was a log cabin with a fieldstone chimney, roofed front porch. At odd angles to each other were structures Fletch recognized as originally designed as carports. Aluminum roofs held up by black poles in uneven cement floors. A few had their tarpaulin sides lowered to keep out sun, rain, or eyes. Also at odd angles were several house trailers which had seen better days. Tipped on uneven cement blocks, their blue, white, gray, brown sides were sun-blistered. Recreational vehicles and smaller campers were parked helter-skelter throughout the clearing. At the edge of the woods around the clearing were many porta-potties. In the midday heat, the smell from them permeated the camp. The place looked like a wacky 7-year-old boy's idea of heaven. More or less in the center of the clearing was a flagpole. The flag hanging from it was not the flag of the United States of America. It was not the flag of the Confederacy. It was not the flag of the state of Alabama. It was a flag with a red field. The black symbols on it each looked like a chicken's footprint. Listen to them, Carrie said. The men gathered around Kriegel were talking to him, to each other, in tones that sounded more tight, abrupt, angry than anything else. There isn't one Southerner among them. Fletch listened.
You're right.
Why don't these boys stay home? Why don't they shit in their own beds? From the log cabin marched a middle-aged man. He was dressed in a brown uniform with patches featuring the chicken footprints on collar tabs and shoulders. His wide belt held in his sizable gut to a size 44. From it dangled a holstered six-shooter. In the sunlight, as he crossed the clearing, his hair was brassy. Carrie snorted. He must have gotten that dye job at the county fair. The man was followed by another similarly uniformed young man, a teenaged boy, carrying a clipboard.
First day.
From his pen on the back of the truck, Leary pulled himself up on the bars. He had realized the truck had stopped moving.
Let me out.
Fletch said to Leary, say please.
Fuck you, Leary said.
The men parted for the neatly uniformed man. Standing before Kriegel, the man stood at attention. He tried to click the heels of his soft combat boots together. He gave the stiff-armed salute. He introduced himself as Commandant Wolf. In a most languid manner, Kriegel returned the salute. There were introductions all around. Right arms snapped up one by one. Can't they go to the porta-potties without permission? Carrie asked. Kriegel and Wolf drew closer together. Everyone began to look at Carrie and Fletch. Kriegel said,
Brunhilde, Siegfried, good for us to have them here.
Fletch said, oh, Thor. As the two commandants walked toward the log cabin, Jack approached Carrie and Fletch. Carrie was looking at the calf bull on the back of the truck. We have to get him in the shade, Fletch. Get him some water.
Yes.
The bull calf didn't need to say please. He had done a good morning's work. Fletch said to Jack, help me lift the gate, will you? I think this bull calf has had just about enough of Leary's company. Together, they lifted the rear section of the pen. Head and shoulders first, Leary crawled under the gate. He tripped on the truck's tailgate and landed face down on the ground. He laughed. As Fletch and Jack refitted the rear section of the cattle pen, Leary got up. With a rumbling giggle, he bounded over to the only man there who was as big as he was. Laughing, he smashed his forehead into the forehead of the other man. He knocked himself unconscious. The men watched him collapse onto the ground. They looked at him with only a modicum of curiosity. Leaving Leary as he was, continuing to broil in the sun, they wandered off. Carrie started toward the truck. She began backing it between house trailers toward the shade of the woods. Jack said to Fletch, what are your plans?
I'm not sure, Fletch said.
Are you going, or do you mean to stay?
Fletch hesitated.
I have some responsibility here. I helped you fools escape. Jack squinted at him. His smile was tight.
You mean to stay long enough to see what we're doing and why, the purpose of all this, and then turn us in?
Something like that, Fletch said. It's been interesting so far. Then Jack's smile was genuine. You saw that turning us in immediately would serve no purpose. You let me see you had an objective, Fletch said. You made me wonder what it was. Jack laughed.
You took the bait.
Yeah, I took the bait. You meant me to, so I did.
Yes, Jack said, I was hoping you would.
Clearly you did. You didn't come cross-country to my house for help. You would have been better off without it. You could have been here yesterday.
That's for sure, with easy access to Moreno's money.
You came to my house to involve me.
So far, it's worked out pretty well.
Jack stuck his finger against Fletch's solar plexus.
Siegfried?
Enough of that shit. Jack took a wad of bills out of his shorts pocket.
$2,000. Commandant Wolf gave it to me. He wants me to rebuild the sound system.
What sound system?
There will be speeches this evening. Will you drive me into Huntsville to get the equipment I need?
Carrie will have to come with us or go home.
It would be better if she came with us.
Why?
Your theory. Cops look more closely at two men than they would two men and a woman.
I guess so.
I'll go check it out, Jack said. See what we need. I'll be right back. After I get something to drink. After I get a whole lot to drink.
Sure, Fletch said. We'll do lunch.
Fletch, there are women and children down there, little children, babies, in that big filthy trailer.
Fletch had wandered down to where Carrie had parked the truck.
Somehow she had gotten a big plastic tub onto the back of the truck, upside right.
While the bull calf slobbered up the water, she poured more from a bucket through the rails of the pen.
The children are filthy, Fletch. Dirty diapers everywhere. The trailer stinks. I think they're hungry. The women seem half out of it. What are we going to do?
We're going into Huntsville, Fletch said, with Jack. Unless you'd rather take the truck and go home, I rather you would.
I can't leave these children here. There's a girl down there stuffing uncooked hamburger into a toothless baby's mouth.
Well, you know, Fletch said, in this context, women and children,
we've got to get some baby food. Milk, diapers, soap. If we get them some soap, is there any way they can wash their clothes?
I don't know.
I'm going with you, Carrie said, and I'm coming back.
That's odd. Carrie, in the middle front seat of the station wagon, craned to look over Fletch's shoulder. Fletch driving, they were just entering the long wooded driveway out of the encampment.
A four-screen, four-door Saturn with Tennessee license plates.
What's odd about that? Fletch, too, turned to look, but could see nothing but the woods. You finally found a car with Southern plates?
Francie drives a four-screen Saturn.
Francie who?
Joe Rogers' wife.
Jack sat to Carrie's right.
Sheriff Joe Rogers?
Fletch asked.
Yeah,
Carrie said. Fletch said, must be a coincidence.
Must be, Carrie said.
Chapter 12. Hello, Andy. How's your head bone?
Feels less like a bone, thank you, Mr. Fletcher. More like a head. I swear I got a good case of sound poisoning last night.
I suppose it's possible.
First, please tell me about the seismic disturbance in California. I still haven't heard any news.
Cable is one thing, Mr. Fletcher. I've heard your excuses for not watching GCN, but don't you even have a radio down on that farm? A wireless? Are you too far from town to pick up the tom-toms?
Yes, Andy, we have radios. I just haven't had the chance all morning to work the pedals to pump one up. They're antique radios anyway. They only pick up Rudy Valley and news of World War II.
Fletch sat in the station wagon in the sun-drenched parking lot of a shopping mall in Huntsville, Alabama. The trip there from the encampment had been quiet. Carrie had sat in the front seat between Fletch and Jack. Fletch had begun, once they had left the dust of the encampment behind them, by asking Jack, "Did you go to school? Do all sorts of good things? Sports?"
"Oh, sure."
"Where did you go to school?"
"Bloomington, Chicago, Boston."
"Boston? Why Boston?"
"Why not Boston?"
Over the ignored condition of the babies, children, women, Carrie had discovered at the encampment, their hunger, their filth, what she believed she identified as evidences of physical abuse, her fury emanated as palpably from her as would a strong odor. She had difficulty even looking at Jack. Clearly, she had no interest in anything he had to say. Sensing this, Jack had no interest in talking. Fletch hummed, "What a swell party this." As soon as Fletch stopped the car in the shopping mall's parking lot, Jack was out of the car headed for an electronics store. Separately, Carrie headed for a supermarket. Fletch took the cellular phone from under the car seat and pressed in Andy Sist's office phone number at Global Cable News in Virginia. The California earthquakes, Andy mused, as if asked to discuss something that had happened in 16th century France. Considerable.
Considerable what? Damage?
Yes, no estimates yet. Covered a wide area along the southern coast. Power lines, water lines disturbed. Some fires, a small bridge fell in. No major buildings collapsed, although many will have to be inspected before being occupied again. Two deaths reported so far. Two aftershocks reported. Geologists are saying there is no more to worry about than there was before. That's reassuring, isn't it? The governor of California has issued a statement reminding people that most of California is not affected by earthquakes at all. I suspect that bit was written for him by the Chamber of Commerce, goaded by amusement park operators. That's called a positive spin. Anyway, the California earthquake story has knocked out much interest in your prison escapees story. Ordinarily, that story would be getting a big play, but as it is, there's almost no coverage of it. Why would it have been getting a big play in particular? Because of who one of them is. By the way, I was wrong. There were three escapees.
Three?
Yes. Chris Kriegel, the most interesting, who would be drawing the most attention if it weren't for the California earthquakes, 53 years old, a native of South Africa, son of once wealthy landowners with banking interests. He has his Doctor of Philosophy degree in Cultural Anthropology from the University of Warsaw, Poland. In South Africa, he was an apartheid activist and a leader of the neo-Nazi movement there. He is suspected as one of the originators of the plan to instigate warfare among the tribes. He was present in a neo-Nazi uniform at the so-called trod-through in Soweto, when, as you remember, 72 blacks, men, women, and children were massacred by a white gang for which the old South African government denied all responsibility and, damn their eyes, knowledge.
Yes.
Immediately thereafter, Kriegel spent some years based in Poland without known employment, with frequent trips to Germany, France, and England. After that big riot in Munich on the anniversary of Kristallnacht, if you remember, in which 48 people, Jews, Slavs, homosexuals, were stabbed and beaten to death randomly in the streets, 9 Pakistanis were burned to death in their boarding house, Kriegel came to this country essentially as a fugitive from justice. The German government wanted to interview him regarding these murders. Almost immediately after his arrival in this country, he was apprehended, indicted, tried, found guilty, and sentenced for murder in the second degree of a prostitute in his hotel room. I guess in the throes of some sort of sexual whatever, maybe frustration, he strangled her to death. Incidentally, she was a black woman.
You're making me sick.
And Chris Kriegel seems like such a friendly name, doesn't it? Chris Kringle. Sleigh bells ring, all that.
Roasting.
In prison, incidentally, Kriegel has continued his old ways. He took to calling himself Reverend and preaching ethnic cleansing, racism, I guess, the same old ordure of the anal retentive. There have been 2 race riots in the federal penitentiary at Thomaston, Kentucky in the last 5 months.
I didn't know that.
The prison system tries not to give such incidents much PR. A black guard was murdered in one. He was hung upside down until dead. Sitting in his car in the Alabama parking lot, his door open to catch a breeze, Fletch envisioned the pudgy little man, gray hair standing out above his ears, the blue birthmark saddle over the bridge of his nose, whom he had seen most quietly asleep, sitting up, hands folded in his lap, like any grandfather dreaming up plans for his grandchildren and their friends. He had plans for the children, all right. Juan Moreno, 38 years old, a citizen of Colombia, Andy Sist droned on, believed to be a member of the Medellin drug cartel. It is believed Juan Moreno is not his real name. Mostly, it says here, his job was to buy airplanes and boats for smuggling and to establish landing situations in this country. He was caught driving an ambulance loaded with cocaine in East Texas. The uniformed driver of the ambulance was dead on the gurney and back. He had bled to death from the hole made by a screwdriver through his throat. Moreno was not found guilty of his murder, but of just about everything else. A full briefcase of bank books, real estate deeds, and other documentation was found in the front seat of the ambulance with him. Various names were on the documents, but all the significant signatures were in his handwriting. And Fletch thought of Moreno, his throat swollen, his body bloating, twisted among the debris in the gully, snake-bitten, drowned, blank brown eyes staring up at a blank blue sky. Fletch said, "Moreno's been found, right?"
"No."
"No?"
"No report of it. And our last report is 20 minutes old."
"Oh, boy." Tiredness flowed against Fletch like a warm breeze. John Leary, Andy Sist said. He almost doesn't exist as a person. He's just a rap sheet. He's almost never been free. 32 years old. He's been in institutions since he was 8 years old. He was first institutionalized as an unruly child. At age 8? There is a notation here that he is a very large and physically dangerous person. Even at age 8, no one could handle him? While waiting for juvenile court in Pennsylvania to dispose of him, as it were, he fractured the skull of a child psychologist assigned to test him. Wouldn't you call that just a bit unruly of an 8-year-old child?
Pesky.
His rap sheet is amazing. The authorities would put him out in foster care, and he would attack someone. They'd institutionalize him, and he'd attack someone. A great one for inflicting bodily harm. Antisocial. Psychotic? Armed robbery, Andy read. General mayhem, assault, arson, assault upon an officer of the law. His last conviction was for kidnapping a teenaged girl, transporting her across state lines for immoral purposes, keeping her captive for immoral purposes, multiple rapes, and slavery. What does slavery mean? He tried to sell her in a bar, a pool hall or something. Oh, you do know something. Of course. Why do you think I need to know more? Mr. Fletcher, you haven't come across these people, have you? I mean, do you know where they are? I'll tell you one thing, Fletch said. What's that? Leary hasn't much future as a matador, either. Even a bull he attacks from the wrong end. I remain puzzled. You're only telling me about 3 escapees, Andy. The local sheriff said there were 4. There are only 3. Isn't there another name on the printout you're reading? I've read you everything I have. There are 3 escapees, Kriegel, Moreno, Leary. This isn't a new story now. It's almost 24 hours old. These are the facts. There were only 3 escapees from the federal penitentiary at Thomaston, Mr. Fletcher. I don't get it. Why did the sheriff say 4? He even had a name. You know better than I, news stories at first are often garbled. Yeah, but... I will say that this printout I'm reading from looks like it might have had a deletion.
What do you mean?
There's a big space between Moreno and Leary. It looks like something was deleted and the space wasn't closed up. Probably just some kind of human error.
Fletch said, probably.
Regarding Ms. Crystal Faoni, Andy said. He recited to Fletch her age, home address in Bloomington, Indiana, office address, the call letters and addresses of the 5 radio stations she owns around the state, the fact that she was never known to have married, has 1 son, John Faoni, who has graduated from Northwestern University, attended Boston University, currently is traveling in Greece. Ms. Faoni has no criminal record, a perfect credit record, and currently is spending time at a health spa in Wisconsin. The sunlight glared on and through the windshield of the station wagon. Fletch closed his eyes. He left them closed. Greece. I called her home, Andy Sist said. Someone working for a cleaning service answered. Her office said she has gone to this health spa for 2 weeks. She is not to be disturbed under any circumstances. Her secretary said Ms. Faoni is concentrating on a weight loss program which involves meditation. What meditation? Andy asked. Not thinking about hunger and food is called meditation now?
Om, Fletch said, eyes still closed. Think yourself to a slimmer you.
She must be a shapely woman to care this much about her weight.
She is shapely, Fletch agreed.
The secretary did not want to give me the name and number of the health spa, but I used my great charm and won her over. She knew the staff at the health spa would block me anyway. They did. Ms. Faoni is not to be disturbed. She is concentrating, meditating, whatever.
Where is it?
It's called Blythe Spirit.
No.
In a place called Forward, Wisconsin.
America, Fletch said.
About 100 miles from Chicago.
Sounds like a story, Andy.
What?
An interesting feature story for GCN, Fletch opened his eyes. I might want a crew to go there with me.
Anything you say, Mr. Fletcher. You're GCN's only consulting contributing editor without a cable hookup.
It keeps me fresh.
Actually, I believe it does. Is there anything else you need for now?
Nothing you can do for me. Thanks, Andy.
A su órdenes, señor.
Fletch sat a long moment, half in, half out of the car, dead telephone in hand. Even though dressed just in cotton shorts and shirt, he was soaked with sweat. Always he had noticed builders in this area of the South never left trees or any source of shade in their parking lots.
Trees are pretty, give shade, lessen the need for air conditioning, but golly gee, take up as much as a square foot of ground space. Instead of thinking about all that perplexed him, Fletch sat in the sun thinking of trees. Slowly he pressed Alston Chambers' office number into the telephone's panel. The secretary put him right through.
"You guys are okay?" Fletch asked.
"The first so-called aftershock broke my whole shelf of Steuben glass," Alston said, "every piece of it, including my best golf trophy."
"Why would a Californian have Steuben glass on a shelf?" Fletch asked.
"Where was I supposed to put it?" Alston nearly shouted. "Between two mattresses on a gimbal table?"
"Sounds good."
"Busted pipes. I had to shave with Apollinaris."
"Sorry, did it tickle?"
"This bouncing around out here is getting tiresome, Fletch."
"I'm sure it is.
People drive along looking at the tops of buildings and they run smack into each other. From one thing and another, there's glass all over the streets out here."
"There's an idea."
"What?"
"Go into the glass business."
"Are you still in the smokehouse?"
"I wish I were. I'm in a very hot parking lot."
"You and Carrie all right?"
"Fine."
"Where's your so-called son?"
"In Greece."
"What?"
"Never mind. I'm hot and tired. Sundays, nothing makes any sense."
"You didn't make any sense last time you called either."
"What do you mean?"
"There is a Crystal Faoni extant, and at the moment she is incommunicado at a place called Blathering Spooks or something in some place called Up and Adam, Wisconsin or somewhere. I've got it right here."
"That's okay, I've got it too. When I called you this morning, I couldn't get through. Would you believe the telephone company has recorded its message notifying callers of your seismic disturbances?"
"But everything else you said was crazy. Only three men escaped from Thomaston Prison. Their names are Moreno, Leary, and Kriegel. No Faoni."
"Alston, are you sure?"
"Fletch, I talked with the Attorney General of the state of Kentucky. I talked with the warden of Thomaston Prison. I talked with the Justice Department in Washington, D.C. No Faoni."
"I don't understand."
"There never has been a Faoni."
"What?"
"The federal penitentiary in Thomaston, Kentucky, did not and never has had an inmate named Faoni."
"John Fletcher?"
"Not John Fletcher Faoni, not Alexander Faoni, not Betty Boop Faoni. I have just checked the entire federal penal system. There has never been an inmate named John Fletcher Faoni."
"I'm being used," Fletch said to himself. "I knew it. I'm being involved in something."
"But by whom? For what reason?"
"This kid knows about me things only Crystal knows. Our tumbling out of the shower. Kriegel recognized a physical similarity. Carrie said we are similar. John Fletcher Faoni has not been a prisoner. He is in Greece."
Alston asked, "Are you fantasizing up a son in your dotage, a big one? One you don't have to burp?"
Dragging two loaded shopping carts behind him, Jack was crossing the parking lot toward Fletch. Heat waves from the noonday sun were rising from the pavement in the parking lot. In fact, Jack was an apparition shimmering in the heat waves like a moving figure in a funhouse mirror.
"A fantasy," Fletch said. "Maybe a fantasy."
"Fletch, you all right?" "I've got to hang up, Alston. Hide the phone."
"Hide the phone?"
Fletch hung up and hid the phone.
As soon as Jack loaded his electronic equipment into the back of the station wagon, Carrie appeared with bundles and bundles of milk, cereals, baby food, diapers, soap, cleaning fluids, brushes, mops,